Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the Explicit Measures podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike. Welcome to the snowy north. Winter is coming, and it's
indeed
here.
Indeed. And a happy Tuesday to everyone.
Happy.
But yes, Tuesday. It is snowing.
What
I'm
a time.
To get all the kids snow pants out and shoes on so we can get everyone to school. Yeah.
Or realize, you know, we don't stop school. Kids don't fit in the snow pants anymore.
Yep.
And you gotta quickly buy some.
Whoops.
Well, what was crazy is I, like, last night kind of woke up to get some water around like 3 o'clock, looked outside, nothing, you know, like a normal day so far. 3 hours later, I'm like, what in the world? You're like, what happened?
Here we go.
It happens quick. It's time.
The weather.
I'm like, oh shoot, I don't even have, you know, gas in the snowblower yet. Hopefully it doesn't snow too much. Like,
yeah,
hopefully it's one of these, like, it snows and then melts real quick, because I'm not prepared yet.
I definitely need to get the snowblower moved where the lawnmower is, that whole shift where, because right now the snowblower is not
the wrong spot.
The wrong spot. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, exactly right. It's buried too far deep with all the crap in the garage. That's 100%
for sure. Yeah, it's basically watch your step down the stoop. That's basically what I'm telling them. So
excellent. Well, we had some really fun events last week. We had Marco Russo and Alberto Ferrari in the Chicago, first time in a year and a half, 2 years, I guess. First time Power BI Chicago user group on site at the Microsoft office. Super fun. Had a lot of fun. Really enjoyed that conversation. We probably should snag the link here for people on YouTube so they can go watch it. We had a little bit of audio issues in the beginning, but, you know, with the first 5 minutes, all of our listeners caught on very quickly and were able to adjust that. So it's fixed. The video has been edited now, so it's nice and clean. We have this nice, clean, edited episode now. So you can go listen to a lot of questions from Alberto, or being asked to Alberto and Marco Russo. Amazing. What did you guys think? Nothing?
I mean, yeah.
Didn't like
it? Okay. What I loved about it is it's not their typical, right?
Oh.
Whenever you're talking to Marco and Alberto, it's seeing them, it's typically in a very technical setting where they're walking through like complex DAX problems or teaching DAX. And
yeah,
this was another side of them that I don't think many people get to see. So we had some good conversations and they shared, as always, just fantastic insights. And I love the play and the interaction between the two of them. It's very reminiscent of, you know, our
you can tell
together. I was, stuff like that.
I was literally gonna say they reminded me of you two. So just like an old couple who's been together forever.
Oh boy.
So but honestly, like, I mean, it was great because even though it was like DAX and data modeling, you think it's gonna be very technical, they shared very much like the same spirit as we do in terms of like everything that was the conversation was some not theoretical, but very much on the impact on what does that mean. And it was like, I've never heard that side of them, you know, they don't write that way, but to hear them talk and that, again, I don't want to use the word speculation. I'm trying to find the right word, but the idea
it's like a realistic approach
to
what's occurring. Like, so you can be, I think the people that are who have been in the space the longest can be the most critical of it, because you can see like all the weaknesses or the crinks, the chinks in the armor, I guess is what you would call it, maybe. And, you know, there's little, you know, deficiencies here, little things to be worked on over there, or this feature was well designed but it's a little bit rough in this area, right? I think you see that when you really get into the details of things. And you know, there was a couple of features they were calling out, they're like, this is just an unfinished feature.
Yeah,
it would be great if they finished the feature, but it's an early idea. It seems to be working, but it's kind of an unfinished feature. So it's very interesting hearing their perspective from like a very detailed, very technical space on top of Power BI.
Yeah, I think halfway through the night, I'm like, this is special. This is special tonight. Kind of just the questions that were being asked, the way they were talking. I think our favorite part was the beginning, though, when they were like, if you use Power BI more than an hour a month, you have to buy Tableau Editor 3, or it doesn't make sense to use Power BI. I was like, wow.
Yeah. I mean, and they were a super pro on Tableau Editor 3, being if you are not a Tableau Editor 3 user, you are not a real Power BI developer, basically. And I thought, wow, that's a very strong statement. And I thought I would resonate with that, though, because the idea is that that tool saves you so much time when you're working with that tool inside analysis services modeling. If you don't understand the value of this time savings of that tool, then you shouldn't be charging people a ton of money to go work and build reports for them. So like, I get it. It makes total sense.
Yeah, I wouldn't characterize it really any of what they were saying as, you know, what's the term? Was it critical from a positive standpoint? Like, hey, these are just gaps that, yes, you know, we have currently, and they're 100% right. Right. Yeah. You can't have an enterprise tool with some glaring gaps when it's third parties that are always solving those problems, mm-hmm, i.e. Tabular Editor. And I think they were just reinforcing that, you know, it'd be fantastic and a great point if this was part of a product, right? Like, mm-hmm, if you support enterprise tooling, we have a tool that kind of crosses the spectrum where we talk on this show a lot about bringing our experiences being with Power BI from the beginning, mm-hmm, how it's not critical when a new feature comes out. I mean, you guys say I'm negative, but it's not meant to be negative. But like, yeah, you're just dissecting a feature and how it fits into things. And I think that's where a lot of the value of the show comes in, because it's like, hey, yeah, we can talk about it right away when it comes out, but we'll revisit it in 3 months as it improves or as these, you know, things get added. But I think from their space, they've always been so enterprise focused, right? Yeah. So when it comes to supporting enterprise solutions and things like that, using tabular models and a space that they obviously are the foremost experts in, you know, it's just you're gonna get that sort of feedback.
Yeah.
And I loved how candid they were. I loved how they opened up and were talking about, you know, a lot of their relationship and how they come to different ideas, mm-hmm, and kind of bashing it back and forth, and that's, yes, where good stuff comes from.
Yeah.
And realistically, Tommy, I think it's the other way. I think they've been around so long that whatever we're doing, we're following their mold.
Right? Yeah, right.
That's true.
Like they are they've been around for quite some time. So
my favorite question the night was, what is your favorite pizza from Chicago? And they said Paisa. And I'm like, Paisa? What is Paisa? You know, you guys make pies that are like pizza, so it's a Paisa. And you guys eat Paisa here. And I was like, oh, okay. I could totally see that. And
I was totally, I'm like, I guess how they say it in Rome. I'm like, I think I've heard that one.
That was the nice way of saying
it's horrible. Not it's not pizza.
No, but Martin said he liked it.
He said it was good. It's just Paisa. It's just not a pie. It's not pizza. They also made a very clear point. Adding
pineapple.
Is not on pizza.
Well, like, this just reinforced that I'm just the third generation, right? Yeah. So because I'm like, I've held these beliefs since
K1. So, yeah, I know. Yeah. Which has been amazing. So anyways, super fun event. Marco and Alberto, if you're listening to this, thank you very much for coming out to the Chicago user group. We really appreciate your candidness, your fun interaction with the audience. It was super enjoyable. We really enjoyed it. And we can't wait to have you back. So when you come back into town, into Chicago again the next time through for some training, we'd love to do one of these again and have some more fun together. Really appreciate your time. So thank you very much publicly. It was super fun. We really enjoyed it. Moving on to some other announcements in the community real quick here. One more that I think is actually a really big mover here for me. And I think this is one that I think is over an underrated feature of PowerBI.com. Paginate Reports is now not a premium feature anymore. Paginate Reports can now be worked on and developed inside Power BI Pro licenses. I think this is a great move. I'm super pro on this move. See what I did there? The words with the thing, the pun. It's so punny. Yeah. What do you guys think? Is this going to be a mover for you guys? Is this going to be something you guys want to use and leverage a bit more?
I think two things for me is one, there's already such a migration to at least premium per user as the minimum for organizations, where a lot of organizations have pro, they probably already looking at a PPU. I think for a lot of people, if they only have pro, they probably don't know Paginate Reports exist. The other part that I think it's great, but the other thing is they're blurring the line between what pro capabilities are and what premium capabilities are. Like, why would I get premium when Metrics now are pro? Paginated Reports are pro. There's obviously a few benefits, but to me, they're seeming to either they have a longer term plan for premium, but they really seem to be merging the two. at least from a feature point of view.
Well, I don't know. I mean, is this a feature where, I mean, once you move into that pro landscape, I mean, do they see many, let me say it this way. Once your models become to a large enough size, once you start using the features of premium, some of the things around deployment pipelines, and again, I think premium is more around the enterprise grade everything. That's been the design of premium to begin with. When you move into that realm, I'm not sure how many customers are moving back and like, oh wow, you know, patching reports are now in pro. I probably don't need to have premium anymore. I'm going to downgrade now. So I think once you've made that jump, you're making jumps into the premium space. Yeah. That is because your model size needs to be larger. You need, you know, more capacity. Yes. You're using other features. And again, I don't think the moving of the needle was patching reports. I think initially when patching reports came out, I think it was more of like a, well, we're not sure how important this will be, so we're going to keep it as a part of premium to incentivize people to move there. But now that the analysis services side, the XML endpoint, is becoming so important in that premium enterprise development workspace, I think those are the features that are going to drive you towards premium as opposed to really needing it for pagination reports. And I think all you're seeing there is they can cover the cost of these initial tool designs in premium, so they make it a premium feature. Then they see how much it's actually being used, and if the usage is not very high, they just let it fall down to pro level. They're willing to take the hit on the cost of that extra thing. Or no, what are you guys' thoughts?
It's unfortunate that like Chris isn't on the team anymore, but congratulations, Chris Finland. You know,
You
finally got
this. What he wanted from day one, right?
Pretty much 5 years ago. So it's here. So that's exciting.
So someone tag Chris Finland and snip this clip here. Yeah, you know, nice job, Chris. Good job.
He tweeted about it, but it was kind of like, oh, what fantastic news to start out the week. Paginator reports finally coming to pro. the Azure Synapse team or Spark or some other newfangled enterprise tool. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I agree with Tommy. I'm happy that it comes with pro. I don't think this muddies the water at all. I think Chris's position on this that I agree with, or at least I recall it being, so it is my own idea here, it's a basic part of the reporting. You know, like reporting services has been like the paginated report has been around. It's been the Microsoft BI tool for forever, right? So people are used to consuming it. It's the best in terms of being able to, you know, put together the pixel perfect tables and matrices, right?
Boom.
That
companies want,
know, are just a company reports or build out the solution in such a way that it, you know, it's a needed part in the fact that they're, you know, for whatever reason, finally pulling that down into pro, I think is just a big thing for adoption in general, because, you know, there's always a licensing conversation. And yes, mm-hmm. PPU does cover some of that more than it did before. But at the same time, like, this just removes any barriers of conversation that people have around, you know, it not Power BI itself not being able to do this. And if they have reporting services reports, now they can't use them,
That's where I was going with this.
Way up higher, right?
Yeah. I was thinking really, this makes the barrier to entry for anyone who's running SSRS reporting much less painful. Yep. And I'm like, well, that makes a whole, again, if you're trying to get people into pro licenses, right? If you have SSRS, you've already bought the equipment. You've already bought the reports. Like, it's already running on servers or infrastructure you already have, right? So what's a great way to get people in the door to get, so maybe we're talking about this move is not for premium movements. Maybe this is a move for getting more people in pro. Oh, look at this. If we just turn on pro now, we can use all of these SSRS reports and we can migrate them to the cloud and we can turn off all these servers on-prem. I mean, we're hearing about economic downturns. Every company is going to be looking for ways to save money. Or if their servers are old, they're going to have to go buy new ones, and they don't want to buy new ones. They want to pay monthly for whatever they're using. So, like, to me, this is a great move on Microsoft's side, is to bring this down lower so that there's less of a barrier entry to get there.
I think that actually makes sense, where it's probably the two factors where the technology is the less cost for them to actually run paginated reports. So they don't
need to be. Yeah.
And then two, they're probably looking to deprecate at some point SSRS. So this is a great way to help transition.
Oh, that's a good, here's the migration
really
path.
Good point.
So we're not going to build any new things.
We don't want to support it anymore.
Yeah. We're making it easy. Yeah. So that actually makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense.
I'll tell you what though. I don't know if you guys have been trying out the formatted tables in the Data Hub, but they're getting very close to where we're not going to need Report Builder anymore, and we're going to be able to build all that in the service.
I agree.
I don't know if you've tried it out, but
Data Hub is. I like Data Hub. I think it's really a solid tool, and I like how it works. How it works right now. Yeah,
the formatted tables. I mean, how easy that to do.
It's good.
It's going to take just a few more features for that basically to be paginated reports.
Agreed. Yeah, and I think honestly, if I had to think of the programs you're going to rebuild, right? If you look at paginated Report Builder versus like, so if you look at Report Builder versus like Power BI Desktop, which one's the easier one to move into the cloud? Like, there's so many less features of building a paginated report than
the design is pretty. I don't know.
Think about all the things. Like, are there buttons in there? I mean, so like the Report Builder software is pretty simple, I feel like, and it's also coming from like a very legacy technology anyways.
I was about to say the filtering, the connecting to it's a very legacy, does not correlate at all with how you'd build a Power BI report in terms of data model.
But like I'm just saying, just look at the software. Like if you download Report Builder and then you download Desktop, like the sheer size of the binaries are like way different. So like the volume of code you'd have to replicate and put into the cloud with Report Builder would be much smaller than the code that you need to build Desktop. No, I'm just saying. I'm just saying. Like, if you're talking about software lines of this, we're gonna actually this dovetails very well to our topic today, right? Lines of code, right? If I had to take lines of code from Report Builder and lines of code from Power BI Desktop, there's a whole lot more lines of code in Desktop than there is Report Builder. So by migrating that smaller program that's easier to build with less lines of code into something that's cloud-based platform, seems a whole lot easier for them to get through and just build that solution in the cloud and say, well, let's do that one first. So then you can just delete altogether the Desktop app. Just get people comfortable with it.
Well, here's hoping they don't replicate it exactly.
Well, I'm sure they're not. I mean, why would you do feature by feature? I mean, I think the features will be replicated, right? Being able to connect to different sources. And I think they're going to make it easy for you to connect to PowerBI.com data sets, right? That makes sense, because that make that easy and then people start building stuff. But they've already figured that out.
Yeah.
That's what they do today in Data Hub.
Well, the first time I opened paginated reports, I remember trying to figure it out. I was like, screw this. And I was out until there was an actual need. Anyways, so here's a different language. It's a different interface. I think Donald said it's not user friendly. It's different. It is a different configuration for everything. Anyways, cool.
It's a lot of dialogue. It's a lot of dialogue. Like, you can tell it came from the enterprise space. 100%. Yeah. Right. It came out of Visual Studio.
From the IT space.
Right. To properties panes on properties panes. You know, it's old school, right? Microsoft, and you had different ways of interacting with and building things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is it user friendly? No. Was it meant for the business user? No.
No.
Right. So is it surprising to me that you come from the Power BI space and go into SSRS and you're like,
no.
Nope.
No.
No, it's not surprising at all. But don't discount the fact that, like, you could put out some pretty amazing looking reports that were very consistent in look and feel all the time. It just took a long time.
Yeah.
But once you set them up, like, they worked.
Well, I think this is a good transition and topic too, right? So if we're talking about old software, let's talk about a really old book while we're at it too. So let's transition to today's topic, because this has been a good conversation already, but we've done a lot of intro. So let's jump into the main topic for today. This is our topic around the mythical man month, which I had to read the title like three times and then read part of the article. Like, I was reading the Wikipedia, like the cliff notes of the topics and what's going on in the book here. And I'm thinking, mythical man month. And you really have to understand the title is how much work can a person, we'll make it, modernize it a little bit, but how much more can a person do in an entire month? That's really the principle of this book. And then, if you have a project you're building, software development being one of them that they're talking about in this book, if you look at an entire month of work, if you put more people on that project, so if we have X number of hours or features or things to build, well, obviously, by clearly just throwing more people at the problem, we'll solve the problem. We'll have more people, we'll have more man month, we can accomplish more work quickly. That's the idea here. So I'll throw a link into the chat window here for the Mythical Man Month, written by Frederick Brooks. And this is from, I think this publication date that I'm looking at here is from 1975, back when they were writing the first software programs ever. It's barely even computers back then.
So yeah, Frederick Brooks worked at IBM and he developed the OS 360, which was a computer's operating system that came out in 72 for IBM.
Look at that. Now we're at Microsoft 360.
Yeah,
full
right?
circle.
Well, yeah, maybe they hired him. I don't know. But but and obviously for those who are listening, like, wait, they're like checking the title, like, is this Power BI? Because obviously the themes here, there's some main themes that he talks about from the engineering software development point of view that are his observations from working on a large enterprise team from development. And like you said, the first one is that the more people you add to a project, a software project, is not going to, you know, it's just going to delay it longer. It doesn't make, there's not a correlation between the more people, meaning less time. There's a few other nuggets, but yeah, I guess, do you want to run through some of the themes or where do you want to go from here?
I think in general, I mean, the main core theme of this, I think to your point, Tommy, is throwing more people at the problem in a project creates, I guess, from one of our earlier topics, virtuous waste to some degree. There's a little bit more waste every time you bring someone into a process here. A little bit more overhead, a little bit more management that has to be incurred every time you add more people to a project. I guess my first question would be is, do you guys agree with this? Is this make sense to you? Do you feel like this is a real trend?
It's not a trend. I think it's just
not a trend.
Action, right?
Yeah.
To me, it's say hilarious, but maybe it's just a well-known fact that as humans, we keep repeating the same mistakes over and over again. Mm-hmm. And it's only through educating ourselves or listening to people on podcasts or relying on people with the expertise of others.
All 10 of you will know what this means now.
That we stop making the same mistakes.
Yeah.
I can't tell you any organization I've ever been in where there is at least one person that is thinks that when you're, you know, down the road of a large development project on any level, that in order, like when you're near the deadline, throwing more bodies at it that have no experience in the project is going to actually solve something. Mm. And they will, and they do. And
it happens.
This falls into the, yes, this practically happens every single day in organizations. And it's going to be a fun conversation because, yeah, we'll talk about the pitfalls of why this doesn't work. And I've never been part of any project or team that this actually has worked in. So kudos to, you know, the author in outlining something I think goes on today.
In 1975.
Right.
Yeah. And that's where
it still holds true today.
Like, yeah, we pick a topic about an old book, but it's disgusting that 85, 95, 2005, 2015, you know, 50 right. years later.
Yeah.
You know, businesses are still making the same
right.
thing.
Yeah. Now we got to give credit where credit is due here. I think this topic was first appeared to us. We saw this initial topic from Paul Turley. So Paul Turley was the person who kind of really turned us onto this book and said, hey, here's an interesting book. Here's some interesting concepts. And Paul has a great number of thoughts around this as well. So I'll see if I can go find Paul's article here real quick. Oh, thanks. Appreciate it, Tommy.
So the idea of the mythical man month in terms of the concept is not the Brooks Law is adding more manpower. The mythical man month is basically saying the unit of measurement, saying that we can measure like effort and work based on like the month time frame is a myth. Mm-hmm. And or like men and month or person and month are interchangeable because one of the quotes in here, which I thought was like, dang, he's like, people and months are only interchangeable commodities when a task can be performed with no communication between them.
Yes, 100% true.
So,
yeah. So if you are working on a report and you need someone to model some data, how much report and modeling of data goes hand in hand? Like I'm constantly making new measures. I'm constantly making other stuff inside a data model, reshaping tables, making some data transformations. Like I'm constantly manipulating that data model to get the report built. So to assume there's like a clean one data modeler and one report builder that can just work independently without ever talking to each other is almost absurd.
Well, I think we also have to incorporate or consider not just the developers here for what we do, mm-hmm. is we have to consider to like the business and the stakeholders. the more people involved there is going to slow it down, especially is, and it might not just be, let's say, a Power BI report. We're obviously business intelligence here, so we can dive from the Power Platform to mm-hmm. Azure development.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have a lot of input, especially for those of you who have built a Power app for a business, the amount of input communication people involved and the myth of just the more you document, the better it's going to be. There has to be that idea. Also, one of the things he says that I love is like, developers are very poor at estimating. Because he's like developers are also optimists, so
maybe to some degree.
Because we don't consider things will break or the debugging side of it. And I think that's very similar for what we do. We as developers also have the pressure from a Power BI point of view, where there's the idea that like we're never working on a 6-month project, so to speak, in terms of like a single report. But there are other projects that can take long, but people have expectations on the time frame for a report development.
I would also maybe echo here to some degree, right? How many times have you built the exact same report twice? Now, granted, sometimes this occurs when you build a report once and you're like, ah, shoot, we got to rebuild it again. It wasn't good, right? But like, if you look about requirements and how to get a whole bunch of things together about a report, how many times are you able to say, oh yeah, I know I can build this report in exactly 2.5 hours. Because it is exactly like this other report that I previously built. The data of the source data is different. The visuals and the requirements on the output of the report is going to be different, right? So in my opinion here is the reason why we're so bad at estimating is because so many times we're doing things that are net new to us. We're not doing a lot of repeated work over and over again. Now,
saying you're bad at estimating?
I think every developer, Tommy was just saying, I think every developer is bad at estimating to some degree, right? How much is it going to take to debug? How bad is the data coming in? I think every scenario is somewhat different, and you can get some kind of rules of the road, general rules of thumb. Okay, if I'm going to build this one report page, I can probably do it in 2 days with some light data modeling. But there's always going to be those edge cases where, well, some of it's really hard and some of it's very complicated data modeling. You're going to need to eat more time to get through that data modeling. What do you guys think about that? Seth, you got some nods there.
Overall, that's why you bake in a little bit of extra into all your estimates. I mean, over time, I think as your experience grows,
agreed,
your estimates get better.
But I had hope.
Yeah, right. So yes. I don't think just because you change a data set that all of a sudden things get more complicated in the day to day. Where it does become challenges and when you're talking about really large projects, right, where there's phases and you got like there's a lot of moving pieces and a lot of data to move. And that's typically not like, oh, you're going to build a report. That's like mm-hmm. a big shift or,
yes,
move big structural changes of data like in there. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot you can miss. Like if there's a, not doing that so many times, it's harder to estimate like, hey, are you looking at 3 months or 6 months, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of potential for the hidden thing to come out of nowhere that delays things further.
Yes.
But that's also the challenge of where this comes in, or I think makes practical sense, is if you didn't plan for that and you didn't staff for that and you didn't add enough contractors up front in the beginning, that's where you made the mistake.
Correct. Like, you underestimated the work.
On a time frame, you probably should have over gone on the people side of things, because then you're ramping everybody up at the same time.
Yes.
And then if you hit those thresholds, it's like, okay, boom, we can deal with this and we're going to, meet the goal, as opposed to being in a position where it's like, can we throw more bodies at it so we can still hit the timeline? And the answer is typically no, right?
Oh, yeah.
So there is a difference, though, that I want to see what you guys think of how this incorporates. Well, from a developer point of view, and he in the book, he talks a lot about tasks, like, they're estimating tasks and they have the tasks in front of them. Mm-hmm. Typically speaking, the majority of BI teams for a report is not like an agile sprint. Like if you had a sprint board in Jira, you're not breaking down in those tasks, like, the data model build for each of the reports you're building, DAX measures, relationships. Those aren't going into tasks like in an individual board.
Not on your projects, they are in my projects. I'm writing those things out specifically. How many measures do you want? How many columns are numbers, right? I mean, there's, I'm doing rough swags and all those kind of stuff. I think I'm trying to get more detailed around what that looks like.
No, obviously there's the estimate and the, like, from a deliverable point of view, but I think for, like, let's take, like, an, I think an internal BI team where there's all the requests coming in. I don't think a lot, and again, I would love to be mistaken, but I think a lot of internal BI teams, their DevOps or their Jira, they're not breaking down the individual components for every single report they're building. Major reports, different story, like different, you know, new data models for the company, different story. But I think when all the requests coming in for report development, I don't think is really like what requests are on the pipeline and what the estimate for that single request is.
So help me through, like, what's your point in saying, like, we're not tracking that?
The difference, the difference is, I think software development is broken down into milestones for a single, like, for a single, let's say, like, application, right? Where it's like, we have to do the back end first, then we have to do the front end, then we have to debug. There are all these different tasks from software development that I don't think BI or report development doesn't behave the same way. That's really the argument.
I think, I don't
agree with that statement. I disagree solely.
I don't think I agree with you. Like, I think if you don't want to break things down specifically into Jira tasks or whatever, like, because they follow the same process, then you should have a process that you understand, like, this is where the majority of time shifts or changes, or it be, is part of the description in that, hey, this particular report is going to be very model heavy, right? We're like 75% of the time is going to go in the model, because then you're not, if you don't have that, go before somebody starts developing on it, then you don't have an idea of where they're going to spend the majority of their time and whether or not they're on track with anything. Like, the best way you can go through things is the way Mike's outlining and have the different tasks, especially if it's the same ones, even on a high level, data and ETL, modeling, DAX, visuals, four things, the same things all the time. And then you can
track get a good
progress of how they're going. I don't agree from at all that you can't run a BI team in the same way that software development teams run their teams, because 100%. I run my team the same way. The only difference is it's accelerated. More often than not, you have a whole slew of development tasks that get bundled up into a release, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a slower cadence more often than not to deploy a new feature, because there's a lot of pieces between multiple different teams, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Whereas with a BI team, you can usually run pretty quickly, and you're not bound by releases more often than not.
Right.
Right. But there's no reason whatsoever that you can't run it the same way. And I would argue that you should, to some modified way, because otherwise you can't answer to what you're doing on your team, which has been one of your problems in the past.
Yeah.
Right.
So actually, this is a very interesting way you're putting this, because I think this is not one
you
of
mean the correct way.
All right. Well,
let him finish.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. Keep going. This is very interesting. You're putting
throwing a little there kind of thing, a little spice to the morning. Snow's already melted. Thanks.
Seth just pretty much almost choked on his coffee.
No, I think you're speaking about, I think, from an enterprise point of view. I think there's a lot. I do agree. No, I do agree. But here's the difference to me where, and Mike threw me off, and I next time I find you.
Sorry, Tommy.
So, gosh darn it. Go ahead. Sorry,
Tommy. I ruined you. You said you disagree with Seth's position about getting all the all the tasks and the line items all the way down.
I usually say I disagree so I can begin my my method of thought. So that's my way of thinking.
You can put your method before you disagree.
Yeah. Something will come from that. So I think I got it. So I think for a lot of, like, for the individual BI developer, and I think you, Seth, and correct me if I'm wrong, there's a lot more collaboration between any project that's being built. It's not just one user, right? Or one developer, one person on your team. To your point, there's a lot of dependencies, a lot of people involved that are helping that build. I think a lot of ABI authors or developers do not have that luxury where they are maybe the person, like we've talked about this a bunch, is there collaboration in a Power BI development? From what I remember, we didn't say it's a ton of a lot where we have that developer, then we have the modeler, then we have the visual person. Usually that's the one person. I'm not saying don't estimate the time when you get a request in, and you should say what the deliverables are. I've talked at nauseum about putting together a project plan that align the expectations, but that doesn't necessarily mean that every individual task of that report is in a JIRA project for yourself. It could work, but the collaboration on a single report or data model for the majority of people, I don't think are dependent on multiple developers where I'm waiting on someone on my team to do something.
So to me, this is the core difference between what's happening here with like Power BI and these larger enterprise projects, right?
Right.
So Rob Colley, in his book around one of his books, I can't remember which one it was. It's the Power Pivot Pro, one of his earlier books. He talks a lot about communication cycles and how much more efficient it is for you to just figure it out on your own, because the intercommunication, it's oh geez, this is going to be really a bad analogy. It's almost like you're running an analysis service model in your head, right? The model will always be faster when you run it locally on your machine versus when you have to go send it out to the cloud. Like, it's the same concept. If I have to talk with other people, the more communication nodes I add in the project, the slower things will go. I have to convey my idea to someone else to get them to buy into either my position or my design or my authoring so that they align on what we're producing. So to me, when I look at this and going, well, every single project that has more people involved needs, and I love it, because in the article here, they talk about the group intercommunication formula, where it's, you know, there's a math formula that he uses to kind of talk through how many communication channels are needed to be used in order for everyone to get on the same page. A team of, and the basics are, a team of 50 developers has 1,225 communication channels that potentially need to be communicated against to make sure everyone's on the same page and we're all marching the same direction. That inherently will take more effort. There's more waste that goes along with that in that intercommunication. And what happens when someone or a group of people kind of develop something that's, I mean, I've been on development projects where someone went off and said, I'm going to make a decision, didn't confer with anyone, went out and built something, and then had to rework it because they didn't understand the requirements. The requirements weren't there. Again, a lack of communication. So I think this is something else we've also talked about a lot on the podcast was, hey, how often is it that we can build a report, build a data model, and hand it over to IT and say, here's the answers. This is the result. And I think, you know, Seth and I have communicated this a lot. We love the business to lead the IT organization in what's needing to be built. Hey, business, here's a Power BI tool. Hey, business, here's a connection to a data set. Go build what you want. Iterate through it multiple times. Go quickly build and make something in a week or two. It may not be pretty, but at least it gets the core concepts across around how the data relates and stitches together. From there, you can bring it back over to the IT organization and say, okay, here's my documented rules of how I need this data to be shaped, start of the data to final product. Boom. Now you've just removed so many communication meetings and channels and whatever, you've given them the answer. They can take that and use the grow up story of Power BI to quickly build out new things.
I agree with the standpoint that like the more people you add, the more communication cycles there are, 100%, right? And I think that's where this, to me, this idea that he talks about with conceptual integrity is the reason, like you need to communicate and bring everybody up to speed on the meaning behind the work that they're doing so that it aligns with the objectives of the overall project, right? And that's, You can't just throw people into that because they know the language, they know how to code, right? They still need to understand like, what's the input? What's the output? What's the expectation of the user? Like, this is report or development. I'm going to backtrack 1 second though, because I don't agree with you, Tommy. Like, an individual developer in your own building your own process, one of the number one things I constantly have had talked to you about and other people is, if you don't have some method of tracking your work, of estimating how long it's going to take, you are hurting yourself. Whether somebody is managing you in that, or you're the lone wolf that's just doing it all, you can't justify your time. You can't understand the workload. You can't prioritize. and you get into this rut that many Power BI developers and BI people in general talk about all the time, which is nobody understands, I'm burning out, there's too many requests, et cetera, et cetera. And all of that is managed if you take the time to figure out the things that you need to do prior, like do the task list, do the quick estimates. And even if that's your side project or an Excel, I will 100% say it is always worth that time to do it, because it's the only way you're able to articulate what comes off the plate if somebody wants to ram something into it.
Mm-hmm. For the record, I agree. But what I'm trying to say is, even if you were to buy your own Jira license or use your own Excel sheet or buy monday.com or develop your own thing with paper and pencil and estimate everything out, the fundamental difference between that one person doing it and a team of developers on a software thing is pre-baked into their job is the resources available and the hours available, where they have a project manager, where the things that get scheduled are already based on what time and resources are available, so they can plan it in a sprint. Too often, too often I may be able to do that, but I don't have the authority to say, nope, don't have the time. Man.
No, you are reinforcing my point that if it's not part of the system, if it's not part of the
business, it'll never get counted,
which it's not, right? It's more important that we start to push that back into the business and say,
agreed,
our team has to be operating in this same way. And you need to understand that we just don't miraculously come up with this stuff. There's a dev process, and you need to follow this and understand that we don't have unlimited hours.
Mm-hmm. And I agree. What I'm saying, it's not part of the culture. When you think of a BI developer, you do not think of an agile, or you don't think of the resources available.
Not yet.
Well, but
that's what I'm saying.
It's not written in the adoption.
I disagree with that. I disagree with that. If your organization doesn't view that team or yourself like that, that is your responsibility to start preaching that in the organization.
Correct.
And if you're a solo person, that means you, like, that's the reason you put this down, because it's not I don't want to do it. It's not that you're not an overperformer. It's not all these things. You have to justify and be able to communicate up the chain. This is what it is. I'm so well organized. I'm beyond you, who's telling me to, like, give me all these unrealistic expectations, that I'm just letting you know what the timeline and the roadmap looks like, even if I'm the only person doing it. In the same way, if it's a team, that's the manager's responsibility. Absolutely.
And what I'm saying is, the idea of that being implemented should be done. However, find me an article that talks about developing for the single BI developer in this methodology.
You want me to write one for you?
Actually, you know what?
There's actually one on Power BI Tips. It's there. It'll be there in about 2 weeks.
Yeah. No, but I think you would be one of the first ones. I do.
Okay.
I'm going to pull a poll on LinkedIn, actually.
All right, this is going to be written then.
Yeah.
Task.
I'm very curious for, you know, obviously breaking down small teams and enterprise.
Chris Wagner makes a great point here. Any leadership in any organization at any size, I mean, even if it's a small team, leadership always carries about some sort of numbers at the end of the day. And every time I'm working with, like, even if you're the solo BI guy in an organization, I'm working with you and saying, hey, look, we need to track what we're doing. Where are we doing these things? If nothing else, get a ticketing system in place, put it in a team's form and track the tickets, or have those tickets. And it's very easy. You can take a team's Microsoft forms, funnel that right over to a DevOps area, and you can then immediately get tasks added in through Power Automate. So you can correctly, you know, capture requests, track them, put them somewhere. But at the end of the day, you need to track what you're doing and how long it took you to do those things, because anything at leadership level, when you come back with numbers, it says, hey, you asked me to do these tasks. This is one of the challenges I think we have in organizations here, is leadership does not understand how much time or how much is going into report design. And what you're speaking to, Tommy, is like in that small report developer centric, and I'm in the hub, or I'm in the spoke of a spoken hub design. I'm a little guy on the spoke and I'm just doing my work, getting my stuff done, right? The business does not necessarily focus on this one. And this is an important aspect that we need to start pushing for, because this has to be tracked at all levels. And you have to, if you want to really be successful in this, I think you really need proper tracking around what is it you're doing, how long it takes you to do things. And then when you communicate those things back up, it allows the organization to care about the numbers. And this is a great push point for when you get all of these requests and then you say, well, I don't have enough people. Well, why? Power BI is simple and fast.
Dude, this is
you can't answer the why then.
It's a communication thing. It is 100% a communication thing. There are multiple groups that I work with in my current org, in other orgs, etc. Everybody knows they work hard. Everybody knows they keep the lights on. But one of the biggest problems is leadership doesn't know how. Where are you putting all the work? Where are all your people putting their time? Who is asking you to do all this stuff? How much volume are you doing in certain areas? Like, when you can't answer those, be it the only report developer in a business or having a team, it doesn't matter. When you can't answer those questions and quantify where your work is going, like, one, are you aiming towards the organizational directives, the OKRs or the OGSMs? Are we making headway towards that? Is somebody in, you know, this business group taking up 40% of your time, and me as a leader is going to kibosh that because there's no value coming out of that business unit whatsoever? Like, that's what is the problem with just putting your head down and saying, I'm too busy to keep track of anything, right? If you don't have a ticketing system, I'm not advocating that every single little thing be tracked.
Correct.
But if you have a big project that's going to take a week, report, estimate, 5 days, actual, 7 days, why, done. Like, quarter by quarter, then roll it up into a pivot. And when somebody asks you, hey, where are you spending all your time? Why didn't you get all these things done? It's like, I didn't not get these things done. Here's all of the stuff I did get done. And we didn't prioritize that. Yep. If you want to prioritize this laundry list of 500 hours worth of work, then maybe we should hire another resource. But you're coming to that conversation with the same things that we talk about all the time on the show, which is bring insights. And if you don't even have your own insights or your own data to back up what you're building, then you deserve the firestorm you live in. That's my point. That's why you do this stuff.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
I'm not getting amped up at all about this.
Not at all.
Just take project management to light a fire. So, well, pray tell me then, is there a particular, and maybe this is getting too into the weeds, but is there a particular methodology? Because obviously project management is a thing in terms of the different processes, the different approaches. Have you seen one that works well from a BI development? Because my biggest problem, I will actually put a blog out there about help desks, because some people are like, oh, this. Because when we developed our first help desk, there was no templates, no documentation on what does a BI help desk look like. And it was the most frustrating thing. How do you group it? How do you categorize it? And so we developed it, and now we have like a really good framework for that, but there's no resources on that. And I think everyone was expecting IT or service help, right? And it's like, that doesn't apply.
Nope. And I think a lot of this too is like, you know, we know these processes potentially exist, but we don't have control of them. IT typically controls the ticketing system, our ticketing system across your organization. Right. I don't think that needs to be true anymore. There are now other tools at our disposal in the Microsoft suite that can give us that capability of managing this. And again, I don't think, to your point, Seth, I don't think it has to be super complicated. It could be as simple as an Excel sheet where you get a request, you put it in there. I mean, you could even put your Excel sheet in a PowerBI.com workspace, and you can just work on that sheet collaboratively as a team. Everyone who gets requests, hey, we're in the workspace.
Schedule a meeting every 2 weeks with
put the data right there. Yeah, exactly right.
That controls your time and be like, hey, the volume of requests coming in is so high, I need help prioritizing it all. So let's have a meeting for 30 minutes every week, and we can reprioritize as the business. So you know what I'm working on. The business knows what I'm working on.
That's a really good way of doing it. Yeah, I like that.
I don't think, like, I wouldn't hang my hat on a tool.
The responsibility
every organization is going to have its own tools that can perform these tasks. And ultimately, it's you building a process and you understanding what that is in order to manage all the requests. Because 100%, you're going to be the bottleneck. right? As a BI team, like depending on what your charter is, if it's internal reporting and all of a sudden you have a large organization and they know you're, they know Tommy's an easy button, right? You have to manage that, make sure you're not getting overextended, but they'll try to use you that way, right? Versus are you 100% building products in an embedded scenario, right? Then your life is likely very development focused, right? It just depends on the situation, the tools, but you build your own process to manage this stuff.
Yeah.
And you should.
I think we got far afield.
Sorry.
Okay. I'm actually thinking about here too. So we have in Power BI tips, we have the check-in, check-out process, DevOps for like Power BI reports. It's using a Power Apps. It's using SharePoint. It's using a Power Automate to kind of help you move those things in and out. And I was thinking here out loud, that project that it was developed by Steve Campbell and Anthony Escobedo. We have it on the Power BI Tips website, which I'm going to get you a link for this one. But the idea here is once you have this thing in place, you could actually use this tool to track. I mean, it lets you add comments. You can add what you did. You could put things against this. You could see, you could actually track the data or the time, look at the SharePoint list of things and see when the versions of files were being made and what was being checked in and checked out. I mean, you could build automation around, man, how good would that be, right? I'm literally spitballing ideas as we speak here, but like how cool would it be is when you check out a file, you say what you're doing to it, and then you check it back in, and that becomes a quantifiable task list that you're able to measure it. You know, add measures, you know, it took me 2 days to do that. You know, build a new page, boom, check it in. You got another thing, you know, you could have like key tasks and you could see the file actually being worked on via the checked in, checked out times. You could have real numbers around all that stuff and supply that back to management. That'd be really cool. Sorry, I'm just really going off a random tangent here.
I feel like there's three articles now. This is great.
Oh no. We're gonna be writing things for weeks now. But I'm going to put this on the backlog because I'm pretty sure I'll be able to.
Can you add that to my resource? In all reality, Seth, I really do love what you're saying. I do agree. I'm saying there are barriers now because the majority of organizations don't see, and again, enterprise, completely different story, but for either the data analyst on its own or that's the single few, there needs to be that sponsorship. And that's probably part of that adoption roadmap that's beginning to get implemented. It's a different way of thinking about BI. Yeah. And I think for a lot of organizations, because they judge things either by the requests that come in, but we've talked to multiple people. A lot of people don't even have a help desk, right? So if they don't even have the requests coming in, they're coming from email, Slack, and Teams. There's going to be no resources available. This requires a different approach from the business to how they view BI in order for this to be done. Not saying that an individual cannot do this on its own, but for that to actually have impact. Like if I just start tracking my own time, in a silo and someone goes, great, like, but we still need these things, that makes no impact. Those numbers have to mean something and has to be integrated.
And I use this technique a lot with clients right now today in some cases, right? Some clients don't have a ticketing system or I can't get access to it as a contractor working for clients. Donald talks about here, hey, we use Planner. Okay, Planner is very basic in its nature, but it's great. You can have, you know, ideas to do and actually being worked on, right? I mean, there's a whole bunch of really useful areas inside. And Planner, I think, automatically comes with Office 365 and that comes with your SharePoint stuff as well. So I love that tool. And then you can literally drag and drop different tasks and task items. And you can have a main task and a lot of sub-bulleted tasks that go in there as well. I think it's great. You can assign people to it. It sends out reminders. That's a great, you know, easy, lightweight solution to kind of tee up all the work that you're doing and making sure that it's very clearly communicated to what you're doing against what the expectations of the business are. This is really good. Well, we kind of have wrapped up a lot of our time. We are probably going to have another topic around this one because there's actually another really relevant topic in here, Tommy, that you were thinking we'd get to, but we didn't even get past the arguing to get to the topic. So that being said, there's another concept here called the second system effect, which we're going to have to come back and visit on that one too. I love this idea as well. Let's do kind of a wrap up of final thoughts here. We're basically at an hour right now. Seth, what are your final thoughts? Any kind of key things that came away from you in this conversation? Does this book resonate with you? What do you take away from this conversation at this point?
Other than that, I got it worked up. I think we relive this all the time. I think there was a comment early on in the chat too that I agree with. Is typically it's people who don't have development or IT experience that are the ones that are offering up this idea of throwing bodies at really large projects, that actually delays them, right? So there's a risk I think people need to be aware of, that the larger the project gets, the less likely you're going to be able to speed things up later on by just throwing bodies, for the reasons that are articulated in this brief overview and what we've talked about this morning. So I think the theme, and he's correct. I still see this as a repeated pattern in businesses. And I think just bringing awareness about it to be part of the conversation when or if you're introduced into them is worthwhile. So
yeah. Love that. Tommy, what would be some of your final thoughts, or something that you come away with here, that a nugget that you're going to hang on to?
I am really looking forward to that article by Seth. So no, and I think there's such a gap, because if you were to actually look at the resources, try to find for me a project management methodology from the BI point of view, from a power, like the new technology point of view. And I find you'll be hard pressed to find it. Go look on Community Jam. I don't think there's a lot there for that. And there's a lacking part of that. And This is the same thing that happened years ago when adoption, there were no resources around it. It's still an issue with even the help desk idea, where this is not something that the community is writing about or leadership's writing about.
I think
there's clearly a gap.
I agree with your gap, Tommy. And I would also say I'd very much echo your sentiment there around, like, there is a known gap in this space. But I think this is because the technology has adapted so fast and we're giving so much power to the business user that process hasn't had time to update itself or become current based on what's coming out of those thought process. So I definitely agree with you, Tommy. I think there's definitely a miss here. There's definitely an opportunity as well. My key takeaway here is, track what you're doing, basically, right? Anytime you add more people to a project, especially if the project's late, there's always this concept, and I use this internally with my team members, you have to slow down in order to speed up. There's going to be, as soon as you bring on someone else to help train them or help them work on whatever they're doing, you're going to need to stop, slow down, communicate to them what needs to be done, explain what's occurring, right? And so the better you can equip your team with knowing what to do right away the first time, or training people right out of the gate, when you give them these projects, they're able to then be more self-dependent on making the right decisions for architectural designs, whatever, all these other builds of these reports. So the more you can invest in those people up front, the more capable they become to lift and do more work on their own, which then will ultimately accelerate the team long-term. If everyone knew what Tommy knows on the project, you'd make a ton of progress, because no one would have to ask questions around how to do these different data modeling techniques or build these different measures. They would just know. So I think there's a really strong point here to educating your team, working with your team to make sure that the knowledge gaps are there. And yeah, David, you said it really good here. Respect the process, right? That's a really good wrap up of that one. All right, with that one, we'll say thank you all very much for participating. The chat's been super lively. We had a very good, heated discussion today. Seth got on fire for a period of time there, which was awesome. Love to see Seth fired up after his coffee kicked in. With that, we appreciate all of the comments here. Our only ask for you, if you listen to the podcast and you enjoy it, please share it with somebody else. Take some clips of us avidly arguing on YouTube and feel free to share those. We do this to have fun. We just enjoy the conversation here. So thank you all very much. We really appreciate your participation. And if you want to find the podcast and you're not watching live, Tommy, where else can you find the podcast?
You can find the podcast anywhere it's available: Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Overcast, iHeartRadio. Make sure to also subscribe on YouTube and LinkedIn. New episodes every Tuesday, Thursday. Please spread the word. We appreciate it very much. And, we got a mailbag too. So if you guys have any opinions, thoughts, message Power BI Tips on LinkedIn or Twitter on your thoughts. Do you have a project management system? and like suggest some topics on the subject at the podcast on the Power BI tips.
You can go, I'll throw the link in here real quick, suggest your topics here, and you can go right to PowerBI tips/podcast. It'll take you right there, and you can suggest your topics there, and maybe we'll pick up some of your ideas, or maybe we'll ignore you. We don't know. Anyways, thank you all very much. Appreciate you, and we'll see you next time.